The opinions and views shared in this podcast are the opinions and views of the host and the host alone. They are not a reflection of his employer or any other organization that the host is a member of. The host does not speak for anyone, only himself.
This is the I Am Pitt Podcast. Get ready for contact.
Episode 72 of the I Am Pitts podcast. Thank you all for coming back and thank you all for sticking in there with me. I know some of y'all probably tuning in listening. When this fool gonna stop? Never. Can't stop. Won't stop. Bad boy, baby. Yeah, I'm still going, man. It's been over over a year and a half now. So I'm really enjoying this. I'm really enjoying having my own show. I'm enjoying my First Amendment rights. Oh, it's beautiful. It's lovely. And I am enjoying creating content for people, whoever you are that listens and tunes in. Thank you. And, you know, I want to send a shout out to my homeboy out in Cali, Daniel, a.k.a. Danger1459. Hey, man, you've been tuning in and showing me a lot of love and support. My brother in blue, thank you so much. So I just wanted to give you a shout out on the show, man, to say I appreciate you. You be safe out there, all right? I also want to give a shout out to one of my sergeants, man. I don't know, I'm not going to name drop him on the show, but he's a good dude. But this encounter yesterday, I unfortunately had court on my day off. And I go to the police station, and there's somebody in the gym working out, grunting. But at the same time, I'm confused because I hear real loud, soft country music. And in my mind, I'm like, who in the hell is working out to this country music right now? And I go in there, and it's my sergeant. I'm going to call him Sergeant JB. And I'm like, I'm looking at him like, bro, what are you doing? He's like, I'm working out. I'm like, dude, who works out to country music? I was like, this music makes me want to drink, not get swole. And he tells me, he says, you know what? There's only two types of music I listen to, like some crazy hard kid rock music, or it's this type of country music. And I was like, you know what? Hey, man, we all got our own thing, man. Who am I to judge him? But he was in there getting after it, man. That's just so funny, you know. But it's always funny when I hear the music that people work out to. But what always gets me is when cops are working out, and, I mean, they're lifting and getting it, and they're listening to, like, hardcore rap music. They're listening to people, you know, rappers talk about shooting people in the face and selling drugs. And it's just always funny to me because whenever we're around that type of stuff in that environment, we just talk, man, I hate this crap, man. Hate all these homicides. I hate these thugs and I hate these gangsters. But man, as soon as it's time to go lift and get swole, we got to put on that trap music, man. And they go in on it. So, you know, and that's all right. But you know what? That's not for me, man. I don't listen to rap music. I don't listen to trap music. I don't really listen to music much in general, period. Some people think that's weird. It is what it is. I mostly listen to podcasts. You know, it depends. The only time I listen to music is when I'm running. And I have not ran in a couple months. So I need to get my fat ass back to it. You know, running gives me a lot of mental clarity. Running makes me feel better physically and mentally. And if I don't run, I'm probably going to end up like the lady I ran into the other day downtown. Man, I don't know what it was, but last week was like CIT week. What CIT means here is crisis intervention team or training. Now, that's when we deal with people that are not all there mentally. And I knew it was going to be a long week. When I took the first call out of roll call, and there was a white lady, really skinny, white, over by the homeless shelter, walking around with a pair of gray Hanes drawers on her head. And it was only awkward because for some odd reason that day, I had on those same drawers, and I just didn't know how to take that. And I just looked at that as, you know, this is a bad, bad sign and a bad omen right now. This is going to be a long week. And let me tell you, it did not disappoint. It was, this, like I said, CIT week and car accident week. I don't know what it was in Louisville this past week, but people could not drive. I mean, every call we went on was an accident or some person walking around out of their mind. I remember somebody called, said that there was a guy walking down Broadway eating his shoe. And in my mind, I'm like, you know, the person that called that in, I'm like, hey, that's cool that you called it in. One, there's nothing I can do about it. Two, did you think to offer the man some food or maybe some hot sauce? Maybe he wanted to put a little bit of, you know, Cholula on that leather while he was scarfing it down. Did you not think about that? No. So you just called the police. Understandable, but guess what? Ain't nothing I can do about it. It's not illegal to walk down the street fighting the air and trying to eat your shoes and trying to floss with your shoelaces, man. Ain't nothing I can do about it. All I can do is, hey, bro, you good? All right. Enjoy your shoe, man. Keep it moving. And not just car accidents and CIT crazy people. Man, we've been dealing with this juvenile problem downtown. And the young people in this city are out of control. How do you know they're out of control? Well, one, a couple weeks ago at the juvenile jail downtown, you know, that they just reopened, there was a small takeover, man. The kids inside had a revolt and rioted, and they took over the jail, I guess, in a certain way. And they tried calling us in to go and quell it. Well, they were able to get it under control themselves. But guess what? It happened again the other day, but at the other juvenile jail on the other side of town. We start getting calls and tones getting dropped. And I remember switching over to the channel to listen to what was going on. Somebody's panicking. We need all rapid response teams right now. Right now. Come out here. And I'm just like, what the hell is going on? And then I see the text coming in about what's going on. One of the kids had escaped to jail. And then the others started smashing out windows and starting fires inside. And then they call out the rapid response teams, which I'm glad we use the term rapid response teams now, as opposed to in 2020 when somebody thought it was a good idea to call them strike teams. Strike team one, strike team two. Whoever that was that made that decision, shame on you. Worst name for a rapid response team ever. But I digress. You know, so I guess the RRT teams get called out. Thank God I was not on it because I did not feel like going and dealing with a bunch of bad kids that had taken over the jail. So they get that under control. We leave for the day. We go home. Then I come into work the next day for roll call. Did you hear what happened last night, Dex? No, what? Like 100 to 200 juveniles came downtown and took over 4th Street Live and destroyed the place. And they were fighting everywhere. And I'm trying to figure out why are they downtown fighting? Oh, because guess what? We had an incident at the fair, as there always is every year. Bunch of kids fighting. Shots rang out, but the state police are not saying that it was gunshots. They were saying that it was noise-making device that caused panic and alarm. You know what? A gun is a noise-making device, people. Let's be what it is. They're just trying to save the fair at this point and save face, but... You know, so the police handled that, and then the state fair board and commission says, you know, the kids can come, but they have to be escorted by a parent. And so I think it was you had to be 21, maybe 18, I don't know, but possibly 21 in order to get into the fair. And well, these kids couldn't get into the fair because they didn't have mama and daddy to drop them off and let them go run and ruin everybody else's good time. So they come downtown and they terrorize downtown. Thank God I was off, but I guess the night platoons who are running short were able to deal with this and quell this thing. So thank God that got taken care of, you know. But, man, there's just something about these kids are just out of control, man. These kids, it's bad, and nobody's talking about it. You know, and we have created this culture of safety and protect the children, but we protect children, but we don't let them suffer the consequences of their actions. And so they continue to do whatever they want. And because of this, I almost got my dong bit off the other day by a kid having a very bad, what they quote unquote, mental episode, man. So I get called downtown. It's one of my first calls out the gate. And they said there's a family having an issue with their kid downtown. So I get there, the kid's on the ground, but mom's laying on the kid, restraining him. And uncle's there, and this kid, man, he is going and yelling, screaming, crying. I want to kill myself. I want to run in front of the cars. You know, and man, this is a big little kid, man. I didn't realize how old this kid was because how big he was. I thought he was older. He was only like, I think like maybe 12 or 13. Big old sucker, man. So I go intervene and, you know, mom's got him restrained. And guess what? We're short. I am there by myself for at least 5 minutes because there's no other officers available. And we're rolling with like 9 cars. And not only that, we were short because one of my partners, her crappy car crapped out on her. So she had to go hop in with another officer, and they were on their way to the shop to try to get her car fixed or towed. And so I'm sitting there with this kid and this mom and the parents trying to figure this thing out and just waiting. So by the time my partners get there, you know, we start doing the whole jujitsu thing where we're trying to get this kid's arms out from under him. You know, and I remember what I was taught by the jujitsu master here in Louisville, Alameda and Ganello. When somebody gets their hands up under them, you know, so I do the thing with my knee and I start wedging that arm from out from under him. And for some odd reason, my knee overextends and shoots and it lands on the pavement right next to this kid's face. He looks up at my knee and looks up at my thigh. And the next thing you know, I'm just screaming, "Hey, he just bit me." Man, it hurts so freaking bad. This dude took a chunk out of me. Thank God for these pants, man. Like I said, he broke skin, and man, it hurt. So we finally get this kid, you know, detained and put him in the car. I mean, we take him to the juvenile hospital, and he's getting treated, you know. I mean, so we're talking to mom, like, and figuring out what his diagnosis are so we can put that in the paperwork. And mom tells me this young man's disorder. And I'm looking like, what? And I remember hearing about these disorders years ago. And it wasn't until I became a cop and then I started seeing these disorders and I thought to myself, this is not real. These disorders are fake and made up. It's those new age disorders where it's not a real disorder, but it's just an excuse for kids' bad behavior. One of them was intermittent explosive disorder, which involves repeated sudden episodes of impulsive, aggressive, violent behavior or angry verbal outbursts in which you react grossly out of proportion to the situation, road rage, domestic abuse, throwing or breaking objects, or other temper tantrums may be signs of intermittent explosive disorder. The other one she said he had was oppositional defiant disorder. Disorder in a child marked by defiant and disobedient behavior to authority figures. The cause of oppositional defiant disorder is unknown, but likely involves a combination of genetic and environmental factors. I know what causes this 100%, and that is the lack of accountability, the lack of responsibility, and crappy parents not doing their job. Your kid does not have a mental disorder. Your kid needs his ass whooped. That's what that is. And you know what? I'm saying that as a man that has children, and I'm saying that as an officer that is tired of dealing with y'all badass kids. I'm saying that for every officer because we all know that and we all have that same feeling. It ain't just me. Everybody else just afraid to say it. I'm not afraid to say it. I don't care. Your kid does not have a disorder. He needs some discipline. Your kid needs to know what it's like to have a healthy fear and respect for you as a parent and authority figures. That is the reason why this keeps happening. I'm not blaming the kid. This ain't the kid's fault. This is the parent's fault because parents are not parents no more. We're our kid's best friends. Hey, let's make a TikTok together. That'll be real fun. Let's dance together. Yeah. No, that's not what this is supposed to be. No. You mean you can do those things, but there has to be boundaries and lines that can't be crossed. And clearly, we don't have that anymore as the American family is starting to erode. And guess what you have now? These made-up disorders to show, man, this place is really messed up. These kids are really messed up. Oh, they have opposition defiant disorder. Get the hell out of here with that, man. I'm not believing that. There's nothing that a little bit of leather on that ass can't solve. That's what happened to me. You know what? I got beat. Well, I was probably child abused. I was abused as a child, as is most kids in my generation were. But we've gone from one extreme to the other extreme to where we go from beating the hell out of our kids to not beating our kids at all. There's got to be a soft spot in the middle, and we don't have that soft spot. And it's not just here with behavior that the lack of parenting is taking a hold and causing issues. It's also happening on a larger scale when it comes to the debt in our country, the student loan crisis, as we'll call it. You know, everybody's up in arms right now, you know, about this executive order that Biden is trying to pass and sign. That some say that he doesn't have the ability or authority to do, but I'm sure he's going to find a way to finagle and do it anyway. that everybody's up in arms about people having their college loan debt paid off up to $10,000 if they make under $125,000 a year. You know, I am not in favor of this, but I will say this. I'm glad to see that at least there's some money from the stupidity of our American government going to benefit American citizens. I'm at least happy about that. You know, even though I don't agree with it, at least some of that money is coming here and staying in the pockets of my fellow citizen. But you have to be a fool to realize why Biden is doing this. He's not doing this because he cares about your student loan debts. He's not doing this because he cares about your future. He's doing this because his ass is drowning and the Democrat Party is drowning and all this foolishness that they have going on right now. This is a political stunt to get you to vote, to make you forget the gas prices and the inflation. This is all, that's all that is, man. He's just trying to con you. And you know, when it comes time for November, I want y'all to vote Democrat. Hey, think about that $10,000 we got you. You know, that's what that is, man. You know, and I've said it before. I'm not the smartest man in the world, but I operate on common sense. And common sense will tell you that this is a political stunt. And people are falling for it and thinking, oh, man, all hell and praise Biden. You know, I'm not a Democrat, but, you know, I'm all about having $10,000 worth of my student loan debt canceled. You know, so it's a political ploy and a political stunt for votes in November. But, man, as much as I'm upset about this bill, or about this executive order he's trying to pass, I can't really be mad because, like I said, it's at least benefiting American citizens. But, man, why are we picking and choosing as Americans this one thing here to be upset about and fight and argue over, left versus right? Man, the federal government has wasted so much of our tax dollars on BS over the years. But this is the one that's going to push it over the tipping point, and everybody's online arguing about the student loan thing, and, you know, it's not fair to those that didn't go to college. You know what? It's not fair that we are not at war in Ukraine, but for some odd reason, we're sending all of our hard-earned tax dollars over there. You know, life is unfair. But guess what? For some odd reason, our government just continues to waste our tax dollars. And what makes me even more mad is the fact that we continue to send our kids to these schools that are, one, way overpriced, and two, these schools are indoctrinating our children into Marxism because they are not really learning. They are being taught what to think, not how to think. And that's coming at a cost of almost $50,000 a year for some colleges and places, man, and expect out-of-state tuition. Why is the education system in America so freaking expensive? And why do we keep funneling money into these institutions that are hurting America? I mean, who in their right minds thinks that it's okay to go to school for 4 years and have $100,000 worth of student loans in gender studies or some other useless topic that you're not going to be able to get a job for? It doesn't make sense. But that is what people are doing. And why are kids doing this, taking out so much money in loans? Because mom and dad aren't there to guide them. Mom and dad are not sitting there like, what are you going to study in school? Mom, I think I'm going to study gender fluidity and cultural bias and racism. I'm going to get a degree in that. And mom and dad don't sit there and think, son, have you thought about how that you're going to be able to use this degree? No, they don't say anything, man. Where are the parents that are stepping up and smacking this kid in the back of the head and be like, you stupid. That's pointless. Why are you going to go $100,000 in debt on a useless degree? And this keeps happening over and over and over and over. And these institutions are taking advantage of these young kids, these stupid young kids. And I'm saying stupid because when I was 18, 19, I was stupid. I probably would have done the same thing, you know, but I made the choice to go into the military. And because of that service, I was able to go to college and get my degree. I'm not going to say for free. It was, as I call it, prepaid with a lot of sacrifice and a lot of blood for 3 years. You know, so, you know, there's options to go to college for free. And you know what? I don't believe in free in this country. Somebody's always paying for something. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch. And so, yeah, just because you're going to get your student loans paid off, that means your neighbor down the street who works overtime is going to be paying off your student loan. And like I said, I'd rather have that money go to my fellow American neighbor down the street. Yeah, but it's still not right. You know, my wife, when we got married, we had debt. And I didn't have a lot of debt, but I had enough. She had over $58,000 in student loans from Western Kentucky University. And so that was when I discovered Dave Ramsey. If you don't know who Dave Ramsey is, Google him, man. He's the money man. He's the Mr. Get Out of Debt guy. And man, when my wife told me that she was pregnant and we were expecting a child, I was not ready. Mentally, financially, we just weren't ready, man. We had more money going out than was coming in. And trust me when I tell you, we weren't broke. We weren't poor, but my God, you know, we weren't where we are now, but you know, we just started following the Dave Ramsey program. And it took me 4 long years of hard work. When I say hard work, I'm talking hard work. I was working 80, 90, sometimes 100 hours a week. You know, we sold our house and I moved my family into this small 2-bedroom, 2-bath apartment as a courtesy officer here in Louisville. And as a courtesy officer, I get to live in this apartment complex at a reduced rent rate because I am there to help take care of the complex. I was paying like maybe $350 a month for my rent. But that also came at the sacrifice of, on my days off, somebody knocks on my door or I get a call, I have to leave my family, what I'm doing, and go and handle this event that's happening on the complex. And then on top of that, man, I worked so many jobs, side jobs, because back when this was going on, we didn't have crime out of control in Louisville, and we were staffed pretty decently. So we didn't have overtime. So I would pick up all these side jobs, working at clubs, bars, whatever type of job I could find, man. I used to work at the Galt House all the time. So all my free time was spent away from my wife and kids, working, making money. Did I want to? No, I had to. There were so many times I would go to work completely exhausted, yo. But I had this goal in mind that, you know what? I don't want to have this student loan debt hanging over our head for 25 plus years. And just the amount of interest you're going to pay over that time, it's not worth it. And I decided that I was going to work myself to death for a couple years to free my family from this financial debt and this financial burden. There was no way I was going to carry that with me and my family for the next 25 years. I wasn't going to do it. And you know what? I had to sacrifice a lot. And see, that's the problem with a lot of us in this country now, especially the younger generation. Nobody wants to sacrifice anything. People want to go and get these fancy degrees and these stupid degrees that aren't going to benefit them in life. And then they expect somebody to pay them, coming out of college with no experience, $200,000 a year. Well, baby, that ain't how this world works. You have to work yourself up to the position you want to be in. You know what? Not all of us are lucky enough to have mommy and daddy that are going to be able to pay for our stupid degree because mommy and daddy made, you know, come from money, or because mommy and daddy worked hard and saved money. We don't all have that luxury, but we do all have the luxury of going into the, well, not all, but most of us have the luxury of being able to go into the military. If you want a free college education, there are options. There are grants. There's options to get a degree. But my thing is, stop giving all your money to these institutions paying these crazy tuition fees, man. If people decided, you know what, we're not gonna do that, man, the consumer has the power in this country, not the college institutions. If people were like, you know what, and we're not going to pay that, we're gonna go to this school instead, they would drop those rates. But because people are stupid enough to go out and get a $100,000 loan to pay for a 4-year degree, these institutions keep doing what they're doing because it's working and they're making a profit. Why would they change? Hell, if you want to pay off student loan debt, how about you go to these college institutions, man, and get the money from them, because they got the money. They're making bank hand over fist. But yet the American people are suffering because of our lack of knowledge and because of our lack of willing to sacrifice. Now, my kids are lucky. My kids are not going to have to go to work extra to pay for college. Because of my sacrifices to this country and because of where I live, my kids are able to go to college for free. But you know what? I am not pushing my kids to go to college. Man, we were at the fair a couple weeks ago here where we live, and they had these guys from the power company there, these linemen. And I was talking to these linemen, and I was just learning about them and their job and how much they make starting out and what their potential for growth is. And I'm just like, man, I'd rather, much rather my kid go and find a good job out the gate, no college debt, and get a skill in a trade and live his life. That would be great. I would not mind that at all. Because college is great for some things, but it ain't great for everything, and it ain't great for everyone. And that's why I realized that me as a parent, my role is important. Your role as a parent in your children's lives is important. You are supposed to be setting the example and pushing them in the right direction. But for some odd reason, we are not doing that as parents. And because of that, our children are suffering and our country is suffering. You know, I worked so hard for 4 years to get that stuff paid off. Man, I was so happy and excited when we went down to Dave Ramsey's studio in Nashville, Tennessee, and we went on the show to do our debt-free screen. We had paid off a total of $265,000 worth of debt. Of course, $200,000 of that was the sale of our house, which immediately wiped out $200,000. But the other $65,000, that was all student loan debts, credit cards, and other dumb stuff I couldn't even think of. But we worked our butts off for 4 years, sacrificed a lot, and we got it done. Now, unfortunately, Dave Ramsey would be a little bit upset with me right now because I got a little bit of debt back. You know, moving across the country to chase dreams in the desert, it costs. You know, I sacrificed a lot to pursue that dream, and guess what? It did not pay off. Now, I'm stuck with a little bit of debt, but guess what? I'm confident, and I know the system, and I know I can get out again, and that's what I'm working towards now. Heck, I just signed up for a job related today to go sit at a freaking bourbon distillery because, you know why? I want my family to be free from debt. And you know what? I'm not going to have to work as hard this time, but at least I know the process, man. And I freaking love Dave Ramsey. I suggest anybody and everybody go and listen to Dave Ramsey and go to Financial Peace University. I mean, Dave Ramsey and his crew loved my story so much, our family story, that if you take Financial Peace University with Dave Ramsey, you will see the Pitts family in the class on the screen because they use our story in the series. And after this is over, when you get through with the show, I'll be sure to drop the link in the episode description so that you can see me and my family do our debt-free screen. And also so you can see the video that they shot of our family and our journey to debt freedom, which they're probably going to have to come and do another one because, brother, I'm working on it again. You know, but it's just so sad that this is the current state of America, man. Everybody's looking at the federal government, but I heard somebody say the other day that the lowest form of government is the family, and how you run your family, you know, it dictates everything. And how our families are being ran right now is just a reflection of the country. And it's a total mess. It is a nightmare, man, because like I said, we don't have parents stepping up and being parents. And I understand, hey, I'm a dad. I work a lot. My wife, she works. We have 2 kids, 6 and 9. We're tired. You know what? We don't want to work extra. We want to go on vacation. We want to do this. We want to buy that. We are just like everybody else. We have needs. We have wants. But guess what? We know how to prioritize what is important. And we know what it means to sacrifice, man. And we know about delayed gratification. As opposed in this social media, Instagram, TikTok world where everybody wants immediate gratification for posting one picture or one video and getting 1,000 likes, you know, I don't care about that. You know, I was talking to my homeboy Eric Tanzi earlier from a Fair to Stop podcast. If you're not listening and follow, be sure to subscribe and follow them. Great guys, him and Mike the Cop, awesome show. You know, he was looking at my Instagram page for my I Am Pitts page for my book and my podcast. He was like, "How come you only have like 490 followers?" You know, I don't know. That's all I got. But you know what? When I go to sleep tonight, I'm not going to lose sleep because I only have 490 followers. I'm not going to lose sleep because I only have, you know, 300 downloads in an episode or 100 downloads for an episode. That is not my goal in life, to be social media famous. You know, this is a hobby and I enjoy it and I love it because I love having a voice. I love trying to be a voice for my fellow law enforcement officers. But my number one goal in life is one, to hopefully please God, and two, be a good father to my children and a great husband to my wife. And after that, being a great cop. Though that's my priority. That's it. You know, the podcast and the being an author and a book, all that comes after all that. And, you know, sometimes it's not always in that direct order because sometimes things happen and I have to sacrifice here, sacrifice there. And always some things sometimes get jumbled up, but I'm always able to step back now as a 38-year-old man and look back and say, hey, I'm out of alignment. I need to reprioritize, and I'm getting this wrong. And that comes with, you know, experience and knowledge, man. It takes time to get to that point, because there was a point in time when I put this job before my family every time, all the time. And I did it by choice. Not because I had to, but I did it by choice. And now I realize I have that choice. And I'm doing my best to make the right choices. And I'm not perfect. I'm going to make mistakes, and I'm going to make the wrong choices. Yo, but as long as my family knows that they are my priority, regardless, guess what? I'm okay with that. And I'm not concerned about the thoughts and opinions and likes of a billion people across the world that I don't know, that I'm never going to meet, that are not going to have an instant influence on me and how I'm living my life or paying my bills. I'm just not, you know? So, man, anybody that does follow me and subscribe and listen and subscribe, I am truly grateful. And I am truly thankful for you. Like I said, this is not at you all, but this is to the people that don't follow me. You don't have to. I don't care. That's not my goal in life, is to wake up and make you happy. It is not my goal in life to wake up and be like, man, what can I do to make everybody that follows me smile today? That's not my goal and my priority. I'm glad when I can do it. I'm glad when I give you good content and you do like it. But just know, my emotions are not attached to your likes and dislike of what I put out in the content I create. My family's my priority. My job is my priority. This is my hobby, and it's a fun hobby. And I'm great to have you all along for the ride, and I appreciate you all. But not only am I happy to have you all along for the ride, I'm also happy to have some other people from an event that are along for the ride, but not just me, but also my fellow brothers and sisters in blue in law enforcement. Man, I had the opportunity last week. I was invited to the Louisville Metro Police Foundation's Boots, Badges, and Bids event. And this is an event, man, where they have a ton of stuff for auction. And this is some of LMPD's, the Metro Police Foundation's biggest donors, who donate big bank, big bucks, big money to help me and my fellow officers function better and help us get some of the equipment that we need, because the money's not in the budget for us. So, man, it was an amazing event. And I will say this, every police officer on this department needs to go to this event to see the people that support us and to see the people that are our biggest donors and biggest supporters, man. I mean, I'm not dropping names on here, yo, just because I'm sure they don't want to be known. But, you know, the silent majority of people does exist. And the silent majority got a big pocket, dude. I was absolutely left in amazement seeing the amount of people there. And, I mean, the event was just spectacular. It was so fancy, but yet kind of rugged, you know, because it was, you know, people wearing their jeans and cowboy boots and big hats, yo. So if you look on my Instagram page, you'll see my picture from that event, man. And it was an awesome time. And I got a shout out to Miss Mama Tracy Shugart. She's a retired LMPD officer, and she's the current lead of the Metro Police Foundation. She has been there for, like, I think, 6 years, and she has done a bang-up job. And she's a phenomenal lady, and she's getting ready to retire and leave, and I hate that. But she's done her time, you know, she's done her time, man, on police work and for the foundation. She's going to retire and move to Florida, and you know what? She and her husband deserve every bit of it. So, Tracy, thank you for all that you have done for this police department and this city and the officers and the Metro Police Foundation. You know, and she was kind enough to invite me to this event and told me, hey, bring your book. We're going to auction your book off with Sergeant John Mattingly's book. Man, and so, you know, our book got auctioned off, and, man, it was just great to be a part of this event. And I've been on the PD for a long time, and I had never been to this event because I never thought I had a place there, you know. But, man, it was an awesome experience, and just it gave me a new perspective, and it made me feel good, because we often hear the silent majority, you know, but we don't see the silent majority, man. But being able to see the silent majority and shake their hand, it was amazing, you know, and it recharged me, re-energized me. And it reminded me of when I put my uniform and go to work, it reminded me of who I was serving and who was dependent on me to show up in the best state of mind, in the best frame, and to be ready to go and serve the community. And, you know, I mean, how could I not, man? These people are donating so much money to us to help us, man. They donated so much money this go around. They broke a record this year for how many zeros that they donated this year, man. And it was so great to see these people so amped up about doing these experiences with us, man. It was phenomenal. But at the same time, as thankful as I am to these big time donors that donate to us, man, I also do not want to lose sight of, I don't just serve the people that donate to us. I also serve the people that don't want to donate to us. And I also serve the people that don't have the means to donate to us. You know, I don't want to lose sight of the fact that the true mark of character as a servant and as a cop is serving people who do not donate to you. And a good cop is able to realize that as a servant, it is not serving people who are able to pay you back. It's not. And most of the people I see and deal with every day in the streets, they can't do a damn thing for me. They just can't. They don't have the ability. They don't have the money. They don't have the time or the means. But you know what? I do have that. And that's why I continue to put on the uniform and continue to serve and continue to serve where I serve in the area that I serve, because I enjoy it, you know. And imagine if police officers only serve the people that donated to them. How horrible this world would be. Imagine if police officers only worked in the areas where people treated them with the most respect. Imagine that type of world we live in, man. And that's why I'm so glad and so proud of this profession, yo, because we don't have that. We have officers that will go to work every day and are taken for granted, yelled at, cursed at, shot at, you know, and just they put on that uniform to come to work every day, knowing that, you know what, somebody's not going to care for me today. But guess what? In their time of need, regardless, this person calls me 100 times and cusses me out 100 times. That 101st time he calls back, guess what? I'm going to show up. And that is what makes police officers special. That, or we have Stockholm Syndrome and we really like the abuse that we're getting from the public, you know. And nobody really likes the abuse, yo, but it's not the abuse that we come for. It's the positive moments that we do get to intervene and intercede that make all the stress and drama that we go through worth it, you know. And like I said, man, it just re-energized me being at this event and just the people I was meeting. And the one thing I took notice at that event was who was there and who was not there. Who was not there was current Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher. And who else was not there was his incumbent, running for mayor, Craig Greenberg. I can tell you who was there, though. The man running for Louisville mayor on the Republican ticket, Bill Dourif. And if he wins, he has already said that he is going to bring with him Chief Rick Sanders from J-Town. And man, let me tell you, I shook hands with both of those men, two great men that have done wonderful things in their careers. And my God, and not just that, I met them at that event. I actually went to a Bill Dourif event last night here in Louisville. And man, just listening to him talk about his experience and what he wants to do for the city has me energized. But there was one thing that he said during this event that really stood out to me. He told me that as an expert in economics and as a mayor and somebody that has done business, I know how to do this job, but I am not a cop. He was like, just like I'm not going to tell Chief Rick Sanders how to be a police officer and how to run this police department, he's not going to tell me how to do economics. And I was like, my God, that makes sense. So this is what Louisville needs, man. Louisville needs a mayor that is going to let the police chief handle police business. Unlike Greg Fisher, who has his hands in everything in the city and tells the police what they can and cannot do, which has caused Louisville to fall into the state of decay and the state where we have juveniles running amok downtown, record high homicide numbers, because he wants to play politics and not be a leader. And man, it is time for new leadership in Louisville across the board, man. And I'm telling you all right now, I want to see a Mayor Bill Dourif and a Chief Rick Sanders for Louisville. Man, just listening to Chief Sanders speak last night, saying what he was going to do for the city and this department, I believe every word of it. This man has over 40 years of experience in law enforcement. And just listening to him last night, man, just it put some hope in me. And I'm hoping and praying that come November, that the people and citizens of Louisville realize that it is time for a change. You know, Louisville is a strange beast because Louisville has always been a Democratic stronghold. But the truth is, and not just the truth, but what I'm hoping and believing is that people in Louisville are ready to put aside this Republican Democrat crap and just look at the issues at the surface and look at who's running and what they are capable of doing, because Louisville has fallen behind as a city. You know, our revenue has gone down, but our crime has gone up. And man, and the one thing we need right now is a city that is safe, because Mayor Fisher would tell you that the city is safe, and all these politicians will tell you that the city is safe. The city is not safe. How I know? I work in the city. The police department is critically short-staffed. There's no cops out here like you think there should be. Man, and just like I said, there's no consequences for these kids in the city. These kids are the ones doing all the drive-bys and the shootings. These ones, kids are the ones doing all the carjackings, and they're just running amok. And you know what? That is going to continue to happen until you get a mayor in office that is going to let the police chief do police stuff. It's that simple. It's not a hard thing. And Mayor Bill Dourif has a plan, and he's got a man that's going to help him to get the plan together and bring this city to where it should be. And it's not going to be an overnight thing. You know, I realized the other day that we are critically short. We don't have a lot of officers on the street, but guess what? It's going to take time to get officers to get back on this department, and it's going to take time to get this place fully staffed. So I'm going to have to get comfortable over the next few years realizing that, you know what? This is not going to be an easy road that we're on as police officers in the city of Louisville. It is going to be tough, because as we get people in, guess what? People are going out the door, and we're trying to figure out how to keep people from going out the door and keeping people in. It's going to be rough, but guess what? I'm all in, and I'm here for it. You know, I told people before, I was considering leaving, going to a smaller department, but I love in this city and I believe in this department. And more than just that, I see that the knowledge and experience I've gained over the years as a police officer here in the city is useful. And the truth is, I've not used it correctly. You know, I've just, you know, I had a small stint when I was a cop, when I was a young cop here as on the U.S. Marshals Fugitive Task Force. Did that for just under 2 years. But other than that, just been on the SRT team, and I've just been a patrol officer. And, you know, I'm always complaining about the quality of officers that we have and that we're producing and the officers coming out of the academy. And I thought to myself the other day after coming from the Boots, Bads, and Bids event, what am I really doing about the stuff that I'm complaining about? You know, and it's almost like God orchestrated this whole thing, you know. So the following couple days after going to that event, I come to work, and because we're so short, we're down on PTOs, police training officers. These are officers that ride the street that train the new people. So my sergeant told me, hey, we got a new guy here. He's in one of his last phases. He's going to ride with you this week. And my first thought was, oh God, here we go. Because I've never seen myself as a leader or a trainer. You know, I've just always come to work, do my job, be a good partner. That's it. You know, and just I left it at that. And I'm going to be brutally honest with you all, but a part of me has never felt confident enough or competent enough to where I felt like I could do my job good enough to where I can teach another officer, a young officer, how to be a good officer. And that, like I said, that comes from years of trauma, from being in the military, told you're a freaking idiot, you're a moron, yo. So I just believe that about myself, even though that's not true and that's not the case, but those things stick with me sometimes, you know. That's a trauma I have that I constantly battle and deal with, you know. But my sergeant putting this young officer in my car forced me into a uncomfortable situation, because I've been operating in comfort as a cop for years. But you can put me on the riot line, a skirmish line, yell at me, threaten me, shoot at me, I'm not going to blink. I'm going to smile, because this is my comfort zone. Chaos is my comfort zone. But the minute you take me out of that and put me into something I've not been very necessarily good at, which is administrative work, and you put me into where I'm a trainer now and I'm having to train this young officer, I get super uncomfortable because it's not my area of expertise or comfort. And guess what? I had to get uncomfortable that day. And I am so glad that my sergeant did that to me, because having this young officer ride with me showed me a lot about myself that I did not realize and know. It showed me that I knew more than what I really thought I knew. And it showed me that I'm able and capable of being an officer with experience and a veteran officer, that I'm able to come out here and actually help train and, you know, grow up the next crop of officers on this department. And I really, really enjoyed having this young officer with me. Man, I can't explain it, but I saw myself and my career in a new light that I've never seen before. Man, just seeing this young officer go out and learn, question, and me teaching him. I was always afraid of being asked questions that I wouldn't have the answers to, because so a lot of officers like to believe that we know everything and that we have the answer to all this stuff. And the truth is, we don't. We have 950 pages of policy. We have a KRS book that is enormous. There's no way to know everything. And guess what? I don't know everything. And when I didn't know everything, you know what I did? I found a way to go figure out something I didn't know. I learned to ask. And him seeing me ask questions made him realize that, you know what? It's okay to ask questions. You don't know it all. The problem is a lot of us try to act like we know it all and go forward. And then when we mess up, we be like, oh, it's not my fault. I didn't know. Oh, you didn't know because you did not ask. You know, so, man, it was a good experience having this young officer riding with me, man. I mean, it really gave me a new passion. And I have officially decided that I am going to become a PTO and start training younger officers. Like I said, I've complained about the quality of officers enough, but I ain't done a damn thing about it. And so now it is time for me to give back. And now it is time for me to start training up the next crop of officers. And especially in this day and age in which policing has changed so much, you know, and I've been a part of the change, you know, because it's just so crazy when I talk to these young officers that are 21 and 22 and they're asking me, how was it back in the day? And I'm like, back in the day, 2009, 2010 is back in the day already. Yeah, it really is back in the day, yo, because man, when I started, I did not have body cameras. It was a completely different world, man. When I started, I did not have a MDT in my police car. I had a large open area in my center console, which I put my little war bag with all my gear for the day and notepads and clipboards, yo. And I went from there, man. That was it. It was literally, I got like the last end of old school police work, yo, for a couple years, man. And I was trained by all these old school guys. And now, my God, how fast time has gone to where I am literally the old school guy at, you know, a 12 years of experience that everybody's looking to, you know. It's just so weird to me because it's like, damn, man, I remember being 25 years old, sitting in that seat, looking to my trainer who was like 20 years on. You're like, I have no clue what the hell I'm doing, man. And here I am 12 years later. I'm that officer, that senior veteran officer that people are looking like, I don't know what I'm doing, Officer Pitts, please help me, you know. And it feels so good to be able to look at this young officer and tell him, you're going to be okay. This is what you need to do. But also letting him figure out who he wants to be as an officer and the type of officer he wants to be, you know. And so for me, for the first time in my career, I'm feeling very extremely confident going forward with this new venture in my career, where I am going to try my best and bring up a great crop of officers and train these officers, put some good morals and values in them, although they should still have some of those before they get the job. But you know, people change over time, man, but I'm going to do my part because I say I've complained about it enough. It is now time for me to put skin in the game. And like I said, man, this is just a different day and age these officers are growing up in, with social media and people putting cameras in their faces, man. And it gets old and it gets frustrating, and they don't have the know-how and the experience to deal with these people, but I do. You know, they're going to have to learn what it is like to be doing your job, carrying out your everyday activities, and then you got some stupid cop watcher that rolls up and just starts recording you. Man, let me get off on a little tangent real quick, man, about these cop watchers. Or as I call them, cock watchers. I can't stand these fools, man. And the thing is, I don't care if you, on your free time in America, decide to come to downtown Louisville with a camera and a GoPro strapped to your chest, and you follow me around and record me because you feel like the police need to be watched. Somebody has to watch the watcher, man. Brother, I don't care. Honestly, if anything, I feel sorry for you that the highlight of your day is coming downtown and watching me and my fellow officers operate in our everyday environment. You feel like that is that important to you. You know what? So be it. I am glad that I can bring you that much joy and that much attention to your YouTube page, man. I don't understand the thought for some people that that's the highlight of their day. Like, you want to come to work and watch me work because you want to hold me accountable. I'm okay with being held accountable. If anything, thank you for the extra view. All I ask is, you know what? You stay in your lane. You can follow me around all day and record me, but guess what? Do not interfere with my investigations and do not cross that line. Other than that, I don't care. There's nothing you're going to say to me as a cop watcher that's going to get me out of sorts, that's going to get me all in my feelings and get me emotional, because I know how you numbskulls work. You all are losers and pretty much have no lives. So what you do, they go around and try to get lawsuits and they try to get officers angry so that officers overreact and get emotional and they hit them and take them to jail unjustly and get a lawsuit, man. That's all it is. I can't stand cop watchers, especially the ones that just start getting disrespectful and just trying to get under your skin. There's nothing they can say to get under my skin. I really don't care. But for some odd reason, man, one of my homeboys, man, I'm not going to say his name on the show because this dude has been in more, he's had more than enough coverage in the media for incidents he's been involved in, man. My dude, I mean, we had the bomb scare downtown the other day. And after that's over, I go home and I'm looking at this video on YouTube of downtown Louisville and this officer's face. I'm like, oh, that's my buddy. And I look at the video and this guy is just there berating my partner, my friend, telling him, you know, you're doing this wrong and that wrong, just being super disrespectful to my female partners. You know, then he tells my my buddy, like, to stop being sassy. You don't have to be sassy, officer. And my buddy's like, I'm not being sassy. And trust me, he was not being sassy. You will know with my homeboy's being sassy. You know, so like, these people are just annoying little twerps, annoying little dweebs. They are police department rejects and they need to go get laid. That's exactly what it is. You need to find a life. Bro, if you want to watch the cops, my God, go for it. But you know what? If you were good enough, you'd probably be on the job. But guess what? You ain't cut the mustard, homie. You're not good enough to wear this uniform. So since you can't get hired by a police department, guess what you do? You just sit around and drive around in your beat up car with no insurance and bald tires and just follow me around at work all day because you have nothing better to do and nothing else to look forward to. So people might be afraid to say something about y'all. I'm not, because I don't give a damn. You can follow me to the moon and back. Like I say, you can say whatever you want to me, but don't cross that line, homie. And I know you're not going to cross that line. And don't think that I'm not going to say anything to you if you get smart with me. I say, I gives not a flying F you know what. I will say something back to you smart. I'm at that point in my career, 12 years on, and I am salty. Extremely salty. I will give you high blood pressure. I'm so salty. So don't come at me with no bull crap thinking that you're just going to get over on me because I'm wearing a uniform. That ain't how it works, bro. I don't lay down. You know, and a lot of these officers, you know, they didn't have the experience of going through the protests and riots, you know, so they need officers like me and my other buddies, you know, that were there, went through all this to try to explain to them why things are currently the way they are, you know, but like they want to go out here and they want to hit the streets and serve justice to everybody. They want to stop every car moving. And you know what? I don't blame them. That is what you're supposed to do as a young officer. That is supposed to be your attitude. But however, we are in a post-2020 world where the things of old ain't flying no more. And you can find yourself on a normal traffic stop. And the next thing you know, you're on the news across the country. And President Biden is talking about you. And Beyonce and celebrities are talking about he should be fired and he's racist and all this craziness. That's not true, yo. That's because everybody feels like they know a cop's job and they should be able to tell a cop how to do their job. But man, you know, thinking back to the last few years in his career after the protest, man, like I said, I'm traumatized. We're all traumatized from the protest, man. But there are some things that happened during the protest that still stick with me, you know, and there have been some things I've carried with me that I have been waiting for. I've been waiting for a little bit of redemption. I've been waiting for that chance to confront some of these people. And I've gotten the chances over the couple this last year. I had a chance again the other day. We get called to a call and an alarm. And man, as soon as I walk up, I know it's nothing crazy, nothing funky with this alarm. It's just a guy that runs a business, you know, and he's set his alarm off on accident. And as I'm looking through the gate, I see this dude. And I immediately know who he is. I'm not going to say his name or his business or where he's located because I'm not here for that. But I'm here to let you all know the story. So I see this guy and he looks at me and he smiles and he kind of looks away from me like, oh God, it's Officer Pitts. I'm like, yeah, it's me. Last time I saw this cat, man, it was on Bardstown Road during the 2020 riots and protests. It was the day of the Breonna Taylor verdict. We had just gotten in this giant skirmish. And the thing about 2020 was there were a lot of people who are naturally cowards that got real brave because they had their face covered and they had an army of people behind them. And this cat was one of them. He had on his I Can't Breathe shirt. And, you know, he was just up, had his face covered and hoodie up wearing all black like a coward. And I just remember I'm over here working, handling business, trying to arrest this guy. And part of my language, but all I hear is, fuck you, Pitts. Fuck you, Pitts. You a piece of shit, Pitts. Fuck you. And I look up at this masked person and I'm like, who in the hell is this dude? One. Two, why is he targeting me? Three, how does this cat know me? Yo, and I'm just trying to figure out, I have literally no clue who this guy is and what I did to him. Literally no clue. And then one of my buddies comes over. You know, he and I came up on the apartment together. You know, he's now a lieutenant. You know, and he was like, hey, that's such and such from the clubs, man. And I started thinking, I was like, oh, that's homeboy from the clubs, man. So, like I say, I used to work a lot of off-duty at clubs and bars. There was always this young black guy there, you know, that I always worked with. He and I were always cool. We never had a problem. Always chatted with him. He said he wanted to be the police. I was like, all right, cool, man. Go ahead and sign up, man. Homie could never get hired. Why? I don't know. He ain't cut the mustard. So next thing you know, I'm out here doing my job justly. And he's just yelling, fuck you, Pitts. Fuck you. If you don't believe me, ladies and gentlemen, go to my Instagram page, IamPitts1. I posted the video and the picture of him from the other day, fully covered him, his face fully covered, wearing all black, wearing the I Can't Breathe shirt. In front of a sign, well, the sign behind him says abolish the police. So me and this guy, I've never had any bad blood. All of a sudden, he grows a pair of balls because he's got his face covered, wearing all black, and he's with the army of people, and there's more of us than them. And he feels the need to start shit talking me. And, you know, and I'm just sitting there like, bro, what did I ever do to you? Man, so it felt so good the other day when I got to face him unmasked without a crowd of people. Completely different person. He caught amnesia. He tried to act like, what are you talking about? It's like, bro, don't play stupid with me, man. You remember. And I asked him, I was like, why'd you say that to me, man? We never had a problem. Why'd you say that? I don't know what you're talking about. It's like, bro, I got the video. I got the pictures. Like, dude, this was a traumatic experience and event in my life. Like, I can't forget you and the things you said to me. And I don't understand why you said them. He's like, man, well, yeah. There was that one time, yo. Yeah, you know. But he never gave me a reason or excuse for it, you know. He never really fessed up as to why he did it. And that's because he's a coward and an opportunist. He saw an opportunity to join the mob because mob mentality is strong. And he took that opportunity to use it to say horrible and vile things to me. Because he had all the time in the world before this. While we were working at the club, that if he had a problem with me or something I did, he could have said it to me. But he never did because, like I said, we didn't have any bad beef or bad blood between us, man. This dude worked the inside of the club. I was on the outside. If he would kick somebody out, I'd just, hey, man, time to go, bro. You need to get off the property or you're going to jail. That was all our interactions. Never had a bad interaction with this guy, yo. But some odd reason, the power of the mob mentality is so strong that people lost their freaking ever-loving minds. And here I am with this guy, talking with him, trying to get him to come forward and come clean about why he did what he did. And this fool did not have an answer for it. I asked him about my homeboy that was with me that day that pointed him out. I'm like, so what's the beef with him? Well, I'm just not cool with him. Bro, y'all ain't never had a beef, man. I just don't like him. For what? What did he do to you? Had no answer. And that's when I knew this dude was, like I said, he's an opportunist and a coward. He saw a chance to be part of the mob and the in crowd of hating the police. And, you know, he took his shot and he took advantage of it. And that's what it was. But he's not man enough to fess up to what he did and said, because now he's scared. He's by himself. His face is uncovered. And you know what? I wasn't going to do anything to him or punish him, for crying out loud. I'm on the clock. I'm in uniform. I'm a professional. Man, I just wanted to know why, you know? And regardless, I know my oath and my love for this profession outweighs my need, my thirst for revenge or retribution. I did my job. I'm like, hey, man, you good? You need anything? We got the alarm here. All right, you know what? You have a good day. I'm glad you're all right. And I got in my car and drove off. Now, I got a lot of satisfaction out of that because of the fact that, like I said, he didn't have the balls to come forward about it. But it made me feel better knowing that, you know what? I did the right thing, and I still serve this man despite my personal feelings to him and what he did and the things he said to me that made no sense that day. And, I mean, that's always stuck with me. And that's one of those things where I'm just like, man, I can't forget it or let it go. And when I was leaving, he's like, man, you been good? How you been the last couple, 2 years? I yelled back. I was like, traumatized, bro. Traumatized. You know, like I said, the last 2 years was hard, man. Like I said, that event and that moment is singed in my mind. You know, so for me, that's why I posted that video and that picture on my Instagram. So everybody can see I'm not lying and I'm not BSing y'all. This really happened. So go to IamPitz1 on Instagram, to my Instagram page, and view the video and the picture for yourself, just to see that your boy ain't lying. And you know, the last few years in Louisville, like I said, have been rough, man. The city went through it. Everybody that participated in the protests and riots downtown, whether just or unjust, whether what they were there for, cops, families, everybody, the whole city, man, just went through it, man. And like I said, we're still going through it. And a lot of us are still dealing with the after effects of this crazy time in our city. And for me, it was always the people leading the protests, you know, that I took the most interest in, because they were some of the most fakest people I ever met. And I'm calling these people out. And you know what? A couple of them are dead. And I'm not calling them out to be disrespectful. I'm just calling them out because it's the truth of what I know. A lot of these protesters, man, a lot of them are two-faced and they live two separate lives. They have their protest activist life they live in front of the public, but they also have their separate lives that they live when they're not around the protest buddies, the protest friends, where they come up to you as a cop and shake your hand and say, hey, man, thanks for what you do. We really appreciate you. But then you turn around when your friends are in front of you, and then you start yelling, hey, yo, fuck 12. But that's the type of person you are. Like, to me, that's phony and that is fake. You know, last week I learned about the death of LMPD activist and BLM leader Chris Wells here in Louisville. You know, Chris Wells was a very, very vocal part of the movement here in Louisville. I mean, that man was everywhere. Always had the bullhorn leading marches and charges, you know. And man, so I learned the other day that he committed suicide. And my heart goes out to him and his family, because I know what it's like to lose somebody to suicide. It's not fun, you know, and I'm not going to make light of his suicide, and I'm not going to tell the details of his suicide, because I know the details very deeply and intimately, and that's not my job, and it's not my place to do that, and this is not the podcast for. That's not what I'm here for, you know. I'm not here to crap on Chris Wells. I'm just here to tell you about my last encounter with him and why, my belief and what I think he did it, why he ended his life. And so the last time I saw Chris Wells alive and had an interaction for him, it was about 2-3 months ago. Like I said, I'm trying to get out of debt. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to start working off duty again. I'm going to start working at some of these places that are bars and some clubs, some, not all, not all. Because sometimes the juice ain't worth the squeeze to get that check at the end of the night. But, you know, I was working downtown Louisville on 4th Street Live at a bar. And as we're up there, I see him walk up with his homeboy and a couple people. And I could see the switch, because there were times when I would see him downtown during the protests and riots, and he's away from the crowd. He would be super respectful to me, super nice, like, yo, man, what's up, is you doing all right? Nah, y'all doing good, man, you know. I mean, having a great, respectful conversation. But as soon as the crowd came around, he hit that switch, flip, and was just a complete different person. It was the same way with LMPD protester Travis Nagety that got killed, man. He was two different people, two different lives. His protest activist life and the real him were two completely separate people. It's like schizophrenia, man, bipolarism. Crazy, yo, just that flip, man. And I had had enough of Chris Wells at that point, because I'm like, dude, one thing I don't like is two-faced people. I don't like people that are fake, yo. And I'm like, dude, if you're going to be that way, I don't want nothing to do with you. So I'm standing up there by the door. He comes up to the bar. You know, he's putting on his little activist swag, you know, just starts talking and chatting with me and a couple of the cops up there. You know, I'm just talking, and he's just listening to him talk. And he's just running his mouth, man. And what I ain't gonna say he set me off, but he said something to me that forced me to respond. And I got real, real, real black, y'all. I got black. You know, I got upset. But man, he said, man, I'm out here doing all this for you. He said, I'm doing this for you and your kids. And I said to him, Negro, you ain't doing nothing for me and my kids. It's like, that's my job, my responsibility. You know, and I said that to him. I said it with some bass in my voice because I was like, you ain't doing nothing for me or my babies. That's my job. And I could see this look on his face because, man, most people don't expect a police officer in uniform to react in that way because, let's be honest, man, I'm a man. I'm a father, and those are my babies, not yours. We don't need a damn thing from you, you know? And I'm just like, who do you think you are to come up here and saying that you're doing this for my kids? Bro, you are not Martin Luther King. And he just looked at me bewildered and crazy because he couldn't believe I said that to him. I was like, bro, I'm not afraid of you, man. And then I told him, I was like, dude, you're fake as F-U-C-K. It's like, don't talk to me. Get away from me. Just leave me alone. I don't like people like you. And I don't. I don't like two-faced people. And man, so, you know, he strolls off, you know, like, you know, big and bad. And he just goes and does his thing, man. And I'm not saying this to crap on Chris Wells. I'm saying this because this is my last interaction with this man, you know, and when I learned that he died the other day and that he took his own life, you know, I was sad because I understand that struggle and I know what it's like to be the person that lives two separate lives. You know, if you read my book, I Am Pitt's Memoirs of an American Patriot, I go into the details of my life, of how I've lived my life. Most of it was always just trying to fit in. Always wanted to be accepted by this group and that group, being that crowd and that crowd, yo. And just, I was never who I truly was, you know. And people have to realize, man, God made one of us, and God gave you one face and one life. And when you discard that one life and that one face, and you start making a whole different life and a whole nother face, and you are living this pretend life for whatever reason, for likes, for money, who knows, like status quo. I don't know why people live these two lives. I know why I did it. I did it so I could fit in, you know, and Chris's reasons for living those two separate lives, I don't know, but this is what I do know. You get exhausted mentally and emotionally trying to live two separate lives. And Chris Wells lived two separate lives for a long time. You know, I only knew bits and pieces of his true self, and it was very respectable, you know, and it was very approachable and very nice man. But like I said, that's only the interactions I had with him, hours of interactions. I've only saw maybe 1 or 2 minutes of his actual true self. So the only version of Chris Wells that I know is the protest activist Chris Wells, which is the version I did not like, you know, because I just knew that wasn't really him. And I don't know what he was battling internally. I don't know what pushed him to that point to where he decided that, you know what, I'm ready to end this. After all the work he has done in this community for the people and for Breonna Taylor family, you know, like, I don't know what pushed him to that level because, I mean, people looked up to this man. You know what I mean? He had a lot of pressure on his shoulders. And, man, it's just, it's hard to say, man. I know what it's like to be in that position to where you just feel like I'm done fighting and it's over, you know. I talk about it in my book, my battle with suicide and my thoughts of suicide, you know, just to know that he got to that point and that level, man. It's hard living two separate lives, man, because God never intended us to live two separate lives, you know, and God never intended us to be two-faced, you know, and it's so hard because of social media. You know, we get on TikTok and Instagram, you know, we see people living these make-believe lives that everybody tries to portray as real, but we know you're in real life, homie, that ain't you. You don't look that good. That's that filter, dog. We know, you know, but man, but when you put the camera down and you step back into your reality, you don't like who you are in that reality. You don't know who you are. You know, you've built this fake life that you've gotten so attached to. But you can't live in that fake life forever because, you know, the truth always comes out. True character always comes out. And for me, man, I wish Chris Wells' true character would have always come out. You know, and so I don't know why he decided to live his life that way. I don't know. I can't judge him for that. All I know is I hate that he made the decision that he did because there are people hurting. There's a community hurting. There's a movement. Whether I agree with the movement or not, I don't like the movement that he was a part of. But those people in that movement are his friends and family and love that man. You know? And my heart goes out to them because I know what it's like to have someone that you know and love and look up to and cherish make the ultimate decision, the selfish decision, to end their lives and leave you with nothing but hurt and a lot of unanswered questions. And I say that because, you know, today is the 30th, but I didn't get a chance yesterday to shoot the show like I wanted to, but yesterday was the 12th year, the 12th anniversary of my mother putting a 9mm Taurus to her head, pulling the trigger, putting me in the most awkward situation in my life, the most horrible situation of my life, where as a 26-year-old rookie officer in my police uniform, standing by my mother's bed, I had to make the choice to take her off life support because she always told me that was what she wanted. It has been 12 years since my mother has been gone from this earth and took her own life. And you know what? It still hurts. I've moved on with my life, but I still have so many unanswered questions. Just like Chris Wells' friends and family and people that followed him are going to have so many unanswered questions. And my heart goes out to them because I know what it is like to live with those unanswered questions, man. It hurts. Those unanswered questions, man, they're going to be there forever. And you have to find a way to make peace with the fact that you don't know and you will never know if there's something you could have done more, something you could have said. You know, the people in his life are going to have to deal with that, just like I've been dealing with it for 12 years, man. And like I said, I've had to make peace with myself and with God and trust and know that God is going to get me through this, because that's the only way I've made it through, man. You know, man, my mom has been gone 12 years, y'all. I look at her pictures often. Like I said, I don't think about her every day. I think about her a lot most days, but not every day, you know, because I'm so used to her not being here, you know. But for me, it hurts when I look at my kids and I hear her always used to say, I can't wait to be a grandmother. And well, I'm a father of two beautiful children now. And guess what? She's not here to see them. I look at all the things that I have accomplished over the years, and I've done a lot, and I'm proud of the stuff I've done. I am proud of the man I become. And I can only hope and pray and believe that my mother's staring down on me from heaven and that she is proud of the man that I have become and all that I have accomplished. You know, the main reason that I finished college, man, I was in the middle of, I think, my junior year when this happened. And, man, I failed my constitutional law class, yo, because I just couldn't do work, you know, go through a divorce, family drama, my mom's suicide. Yo, just I couldn't do my work. You know, just I failed my class, but that was the only class I ever failed was constitutional law, yo, because I was so distracted by my mom's death and grieving. But guess what? I bounced back and made it right because I always remember my mother tell me, Dexter, get you a degree. And you know what I did? I went and got me a degree because my mom, that's what my mom wanted. And I didn't do it for just herself, but I did it for myself because I knew that my mother believed in me and everything that I was capable of. The sad part is I just wish that she had knew and believed in herself and knew that what she was capable of. Now, I just wish that things could be different, but things aren't different and things just are the way they are. And there's nothing I can do to bring my mother back. But the best thing that I can do is share my story and share my mother's story in my book and on this podcast and share a bit and piece of Chris Wells' story to tell people to be your authentic self, man. My mom, the greatest woman I've ever known in my life, she had two separate lives. She had two faces. And I only knew of the one face. I only knew of the confident, loving, beautiful, happy, you know, just love the Lord. Every time you see her, how you doing, mama? Blessed and highly favored, baby. I'm covered in blessings by the Lord. You know, that smile and that single gold tooth, y'all. That gold tooth always stood out that she had, you know, and that's how I always knew my mother. You know, I knew she had issues. I mean, everybody's got demons. I just didn't realize the extent of the issues and the demons that she had that she was battling her entire life. If you read my book, you will read about all those demons and those battles. And you'll read how she transferred some of her own trauma to me. Not out of spite, but just because she didn't know how to deal with her trauma, you know? So I'm using her life's mistakes to be a better father to my children so that I don't pass down my trauma to my kids. You know, for years I battled with hating myself for being dark skinned because my mother passed that down to me. I've always thought that dark skin was ugly because that's what I was always taught and made to believe. That's because that was what my mother was taught and made to believe. She passed that drama down to me. And you know what? It took me years to get comfortable to know and love myself to the point to where I look at myself in the mirror and I like who I see. But even more, I like who I am below the surface. And I see the trauma and the stress that happens when people live two separate lives. Because like I said, I lived two separate lives at one point. And, you know, I'd have my public face. But when I would go home and shut the door, even after being a hero to the city, after almost dying in Iraq and being this quote unquote hero, war hero, I would cry myself to sleep at night because I was so unhappy. But I couldn't let people see I was unhappy because I had to keep up with this persona because of who I was married to, this pastor's daughter. You know, but I had to keep up this fake persona that I'm a cop and I got to be tough. I don't have problems. I solve problems. And I kept up that facade for years. And guess what? It almost ended my life. But by the grace of God, a good chain of command here in Louisville, the old school guard of the Louisville Metro Police Department, you know, a lot of those guys are gone and retired, but man, because of them, I am still here because they showed that they loved me and cared about me and they saved my life and my career. And I tell people, I've said it before, I've left LMPD, but it's so hard for me to leave and say I'm going to leave because I have such an attachment to this police department. Because when I had nothing left in my life and I didn't even value my own life, this police department and the people on it were the thing that gave me hope and they were there for me. So it's hard for me to sit here and just crap on LMPD because the LMPD I know and remember is the LMPD that kept me alive and gave me hope, man. That's why I love this police department so much. You know, when people don't realize and understand that, man, 12 years ago, this place was all I had. And when I thought I was going to lose my job here, guess what? That was it. That was the final straw for me because I had nothing else to hold on to. But this place proved to me that if you're a good officer, if you're just a good person, man, this place will look out for you. Although this place has changed and it's not the same place, and I don't believe that that still holds true, I know that it holds true for the people that I work with every day on my squad. And I know that it holds true for a lot of the people in my direct chain of command, you know. And I am thankful for this police department. Man, I am thankful for how they have been there for me over the years. But you know what? I'm also thankful for the lessons that I have learned from all these hardships that I have endured and suffered over the years. You know, I miss my mother more than anything. And it would be a shame for me to just let her story die and her struggles and her triumph and her struggles just die with her. You know, we don't go through struggles just for ourselves. We go through struggles to become stronger because, you know, it's in the struggles that we are made better and we are made whole. And if I would have never known of my mother's struggles, I would not have had my own struggles. And if I would not have had my own struggles, I would not be in the position now to tell you all that if you're out there living a life that's not real, that's fake, and you're living two lives, it's not worth it, man. It's not worth it. Be who you are. Don't worry about fitting in with the crowd. Don't worry about the amount of likes and clicks you're getting on social media because those people don't really know you and don't care about you. Some might, but not all. Dude, be who you are. Don't worry about the crowd, dude. Trust me. And that's one thing I can say about myself now. And people say it for me. The Dexter Pitts you get is the Dexter Pitts you get 24/7. I am Pitts 24/7. That's why the name of my book is I Am Pitts. That's why the name of this podcast is I Am Pitts, because I know who I am and I'm not selling out for anyone or anybody or anything. There's nothing anyone can offer me to make me go against my Pitts principles: personal responsibility, integrity, trustworthiness, tenacity, and being selfless. You know, I am not perfect. I am a man and I make mistakes constantly. But I have those principles ingrained in me and I'm not breaking them for anybody, because when I was not living by those principles, I was living on the edge and I almost made the choice to take my Glock 22, while I was sitting in my 2003 green GMC Envoy in the Fraternal Order of Police parking lot on Price Lane, putting that barrel to my head and taking the slack out the trigger, ready to end it all because I had nothing left to hold on to. It's not worth it to live two separate lives. We were not meant to live like that, people. We were not. We can only carry on that act for so long until it all piles up and it all catches up with us. Just like it caught up with my mother, just like it caught up with me, and it caught up with Chris Wells and so many other people, man. And I know some people are probably listening to this, maybe some protesters or whatnot, I don't know. But like, man, he's trash talking Chris Wells. I'm not. Like I said, I'm not here to disrespect the dead. I'm not here to disrespect, you know, somebody that has committed suicide, because I have too many friends that have done it. And like I said, I lost my mother to suicide tragically. And man, that's the last thing I want to do. So I am sorry for his loss to his family, you know. And man, like I say, it's going to take them some time to work through it. But as you see, you can get through these things. I got through the most traumatic event in my life with my mother taking her own life and me having to take her off life support in my uniform. I made it through it. And so, guess what? So can you. And if I could find myself and struggle and suffer through, so can you. Just do me a favor. When you do get to the end of your struggle, don't keep your struggle to yourself. Don't keep all your knowledge to yourself. Don't keep all the things that you have learned in this life to yourself, because the lesson is not just for you. It is for those around you. And that is how we make this world a better place, man. And so before we get ready to get out of here, got a little bit of house cleaning to do. Man, I want to go ahead and just have a moment of silence for a fallen LMPD officer and current Shelbyville police officer who was killed the other last week while out riding his bike here in Louisville. It's Officer Thomas Elmore. You know, he retired here, and I think, I can't remember the year, and I don't want to mess it up, man. Maybe 2016, you know. And I've been around a while, and I know a lot of people, but I don't know everybody. But I remember running into him here and there and talking with him. You know, like I said, there used to be a lot of people on this department, not anymore. So the circle's a little smaller, you know, but regardless, you know, I still remember a couple interactions with him. Nothing crazy, nothing deep, you know, but it's always sad when you learn of a fellow officer that makes it to the end of their career, you know, and they've sacrificed all these years, you know, and just they don't really get to enjoy their retirement because, you know, their life gets cut short. You know, and this man got a retirement and still serving. That just tells you the quality of officers that we have in this country, you know. And I mean, from what I hear, you know, everybody says he was a stand up guy, you know. Like I said, I can't speak for him personally, but his work ethic that I've heard about was unmatched, man. The man was a great cop. And, you know, there's a mother and, you know, there's his wife and his kids are hurting right now. So if we could, man, let's just all have a moment of silence for our fallen brother, Thomas Elmore. Rest in peace, my brother. And before we get out of here, a little bit more house cleaning. You know, one of the key components of this show this week was, you know, suicide. And man, we have people battle with suicide, especially our military veterans and our first responders. I mean, you're talking fire, police, EMS. We deal with the worst every day. I mean, we see tragedy after tragedy after tragedy. And like I said, sometimes we build ourselves up to be Superman, and the truth is that we're not. But that is why I sit on the board of the Roy Williams Foundation, in which we exist to help those that have served and sacrificed so much for us, and yet we don't give enough to them in order for their sacrifices. Because when the uniform comes off, you know, the demons are still there, and it's hard to carry those demons. And like I said, a lot of cops, a lot of first responders and veterans, man, we have two faces. We have our public face, but then we have our real face and our real life in public, and it's in shambles. And the Roy Williams, like I said, the Roy Williams Foundation exists to help those that have given so much carry on with their lives and get the help that they're needing. And if you could, please go to the RoyWilliamsFoundation.org and click on the donate button. And if you can, donate whatever little you can. Every bit counts. And every time you donate, man, you are helping a veteran or you're helping a first responder get the help that they need. And last on that note, I Am Pitt's Memoirs of an American Patriot is out. Man, I had a phenomenal event the other day here in Jeffersontown, Kentucky, at American Legion Post 244. I was the guest at the Vietnam Veterans Association meeting and breakfast, and I got to sit there with my wife and kids, and I got to sign books and just talk with those that came home but did not get the proper welcome home. So our Vietnam veterans. So a round of applause for our Vietnam veterans. I love you guys because you all laid the groundwork for what is the current way veterans are treated, man. So I appreciate them, man. I appreciate them for having me as the guest of honor there and allowing me to come and sell my book and sign some books, man. So it's been a great ride thus far. The book is, you know, doing well. I just got a fresh brand new order of books in. So if you want to order a book from me, just go to iampitz.com and click on the link to order. Or if you want to, you can buy from me direct. Just send me an email to iampitz@yahoo.com, and I will send you a signed autographed copy, and I'll tell you how to do so, how to purchase it from me. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for tuning in again to this recent week of the I Am Pitz podcast. I said it before, you know, I'm not here to simply just get likes. I'm not here to just be internet famous and Instagram famous. That's not my goal. I appreciate the support. I appreciate the love, and I appreciate the likes. I really do. So tell your friends, tell your families about the show. If you could, go and rate the show. But just know, if you don't rate it, man, I'm not going to hate you. If you don't leave me a review, guess what? I'm not going to hate you, because I don't live for reviews and ratings. They're nice to have, but if I don't get them, it's not going to change anything about me and how I'm operating, because I don't do this for money and I don't do this for sponsorships. I do this because this is what I like to do and love to do. And I believe in giving my fellow officers a voice. And I believe in trying to speak up when everyone else is afraid to speak up, because this is America and we have freedom of speech in this country. And just because you put on a uniform does not mean that you forfeit your rights to have your opinion and your views be heard. So anybody that wants to hear my opinions and views and tunes into this show whenever I put them out, mostly weekly, thank you so much. I appreciate you. I appreciate everything that you do. To those that have purchased my book, thank you. And I appreciate the support. It means more to me than you will ever know. And I hope and pray that you all get something out of the show and something out of the book. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the I Am Pitz podcast. Thank you all for tuning in, and I will see you on the next one.